I've got a very simple curiosity as to how insects, especially beetles, move within a stand and between stands, that 500 to 500 meter range, especially as how attractants might, whether it's pheromones, cinnamons, how do they play in that range of attraction and movement? And the obvious applied implication is detection and monitoring programs. A lot of uses there. Now, our research focus in the last couple of years has been the southern pine sawyer. It's very common in the south, except the last couple of years we've moved into seven of the eight species of North America. The only one we do not work with is balsam fir sawyer. And the reason is that quarantine issues. I mean, certainly with sawyers, damage to the lumber by larvae is a concern, but mostly it's about transmission of pinewood nematode disease, which causes severe wilt disease in other countries and pretty much closes down our markets to Europe, for instance, in chips and wood products. When you're talking about range of attractants, moths, it's all about sex, pheromones. Male or female, females advertise, males come in. And it goes beyond mid-range to long-range. When we look at bark beetles, it's about sex, food, and shelter. And there's more information than just a sex available individual. And you see pheromones and chiromones used. And when you look at wood borers, Monocamus pine sawyers, for instance, it's still about sex and food, but do they need pheromones for this mid-range attraction? I mean, we always sort of automatically assume that all insects produce pheromones for everything, but maybe not for everything. With bark beetles, we have these large, dense aggregations. They occur in a very short period of time. It's a very, very intense period. Their commitment, once they get there, they get right underneath the bark and they stay within the galleries, within the bark. They're not out anymore. And their visual signals are very low. But when you look at pine sawyer, it's pretty much reverse. You don't have these large aggregations. The display period is much longer. The commitment to galleries is virtually non-existent by the adults. And there's a lot of visual signals. So my question is, maybe at this mid-range attraction, I mean, short range for sure, there's probably some pheromones involved. We've seen that a lot of that already. But maybe at this mid-range, it's more about chiromones and a lot less about pheromones. And I thought I'd talk fast, but probably a little slower now. We know of data already in the south, for instance, Titillator carolinensis. We know they're attracted to ethanol and turpentine. It's been done before. And there's other species that also show attraction to ethanol and monoterpenes. So we try that in the south. We compared ethanol with minosulfapinene, and this is all in beta funnel traps. The reason we use funnel traps is because we were actually doing something else before, and this is all incidental data. And we found that the combination of ethanol and minosulfapinene was definitely attracted to Monocamus titillator. And we found that in about eight different sites, very consistent results, but not large numbers, nothing that you go home and brag about. It's over an 8 to 10 week period. Now, chiromones for bark beetles are also used by other individuals for non-beneficial uses for the bark beetles. There's always a problem you use pheromones that either a competitor is listening in and can come in and out-compete you, or a predator can come in and eat you, one of the two. That's also something to do with southern sawyers as well. I mean, there's an awful lot of cases where larvae of southern sawyers can actually eat through bark beetle larvae. And we have found times when sawyers will actually come into trees already attacked by Ips pinae, by southern Ips. Now, the two pheromones that these Ips use are Ips and Ips dienol. That's about all the chemistry you can see is these two things. And the only difference is this double bond at the bottom with Ips dienol that is absent with Ipsinol. And these are two very ubiquitous Ips pheromones, like right across North America and overseas. Now, titillator, we know, is already attracted to the combination of Ipsinol, Ips dienol, and Cisfibrinol. These compounds, Ipsinol, Ips dienol, seem to occur with some other species too. Clamator, Sculatus, and Gila provincialis over in Spain. So we tested Ipsinol, Ips dienol, and Lanierol, another common pheromone for Ips, and found that we were getting lots of numbers now. This is over 8 week period, almost 1,500 individuals in one location we had all these traps at. And the anything with Ipsinol and Ips dienol caught more in the controls, and certainly the combination was always fairly attractive. And this is with funnel traps, so we're kind of excited about this. And we found the same results in Louisiana, Georgia, and North Carolina, that these Ips pheromones were definitely attractive to southern sawyers. So we decided, well, what happens if we combine the tree rows with these pine engraver pheromones? We used ethanol for pine again, that releases about a gram per day, very consistent lures, again with the funnel trap. The bark beetle pheromones are Ipsinol, Ips dienol, and note that these are actually very low release rates compared to some other stuff. These are bark beetle devices for bark beetle captures, and probably talking about 10 to 15 males producing these kind of compounds. And we did tree treatments, 10 reps, 4 locations, over 9 weeks across Louisiana, Florida, Georgia, and Virginia. And these are all in single location within these sites. And we found, if you put them all together, you're starting to get some good numbers as well. There's definitely an interaction. Both the combination of all four compounds was much more attractive than any of the other two binary combinations. And we found in the other locations as well. If you put them all four together, you cut an awful lot of beetles. And this is males and females. This is an aggregation response. There's no sex specificity here at all. Now, we also caught Monocamus cutulatus up in Virginia. And again, it came into the four-way combination. It was highly attractive, all four compounds being there. And others, especially up in Canada, have also worked with Monocamus species and found same kind of results with the IFS pheromones and various host volatiles. We've also, they found this with a whole bunch of other species as well. You see Costello here did some work in South Dakota to add the American component. But most of his work has been done in Canada, and all with various types of methodologies and compounds tested. So our thought was, let's try to do this across North America and see how ubiquitous this one combination could be in a fairly simple quarantine monitoring program. So those are the four locations we did in 2006. And then in 2007, we got 10 other locations across North America. We had added back the blank control since we hadn't done any tests before in these locations. And then in 2008, we had another 12 locations. We had about 26 locations now across North America, whole variety of pine species. We've looked at pretty much all 2006 data, pretty much all the soy beetle stuff in 2007, but haven't touched 2008 yet, but there are lots of numbers in there. And obviously, needless to say, there's an awful lot of collaborators in this endeavor. It's also the halfway mark, so I think I'm doing okay. With Monocamus cutulatus in Ontario, we actually got very low numbers, but most of them are in this four-way combination again. We had similar results in New Hampshire and in New Brunswick. Sweeney wasn't very good at catching Cerambycids, but, and again, you can see all the collaborators listed in here. So there's not a lot of people helped out in this project. Now with Monocamus carolinensis, again, the four-way combination attracted more beetles than any of the other treatments in Michigan, as well as in Tennessee. With Monocamus clematter, same idea again. I mean, think Andy Gleason in Oregon caught about, I think it was about 8 pounds of beetles over this period, but also includes chalcophores as well. So again, a very strong attraction to this four-way combination over an 8 to 10 week period. Same happened in California and Montana, with various population levels of beetles obviously present. In 2007, we also found Notatus was actually attracted to, though we didn't catch that many yet, and same with Obtusus. Again, not all experiments in 2008 have been analyzed, but we also found similar results with Mutator. Now, what was really cool is in 2006, we looked at the other pine cerambycids. We haven't looked at them yet for the other years, and found that Acanthocyanus obsoletus, for instance, it likes the ethanol for pine mixture as well. It also likes the IFS pheromones, IFS dienyl and IFS dienyl combinations. You put them all together, and sure enough, you get attraction to the four-way combination as well. You also find some other species, Radium inquisitor, a very common, but I never caught much of them, but in this case, it was definitely significant, as well as a couple other species that seem to all like this four-way combination. Some species, like the ethanol pinene, Ipsenops dienyl doesn't do a thing for them, but it doesn't decrease them either. So it stays fairly constant and good numbers. So basically, in sort of summary and conclusion, running a little short here, but that's okay. We found that traps baited with this Ipsenops dienyl, ethanol, and alpha-pinene are attracted to 7 of 8 Monocamus species in North America. They're also attracted to other pine cerambycids. There's a lot of diversity here in these simple lure combinations. We also catch lots, I mean, the reason we started doing this was for bark beetles and ambrosia beetles. We catch a lot of those as well. We're talking about 40 to 50 species of ambrosia beetles just in the south that we catch with this. Click beetles and a whole bunch of bark beetle predators. I mean, there's a lot of diversity just with this very four-way, four-component lure. But the question always comes, can we do better? I'm always talking about doing better. People always give me a hard time for using funnel traps for cerambycids. And sure enough, I mean, intercept trap probably catches much more. But we're getting significant numbers with funnel traps anyway, that if we could do it, show it with the funnel traps, we figured we'd probably work with the intercept traps too. But it raises the question of how far do you want to go with increasing trap sizes? I mean, if effectiveness is based on increasing trap catches, then there are probably designs we can play with, trap location, edges versus within a stand. Lure location within trap, I mean, does it matter if it's outside or inside the trap? Wet versus dry collection cups. I mean, we know wet cups catch, with dry cups, you probably lose about 80% of your cerambycids that just get out again. There's also issues of other host compounds and other pheromones produced by other bark beetles and other wood-boring beetles. But on the other hand, if you really think about efficacy, then what we need to start doing is trying to figure out how well does this stuff compete with natural attractants, especially at Ports Venture, where there is very little in terms of natural attractants. And if you can't do that, at least figure out some way we can estimate population size. And if we're trying to do risk management and avoid these kind of scenarios, we need to figure out what do we do, where, and how important it might be to do it quickly. Now, the big part is all this work required an awful lot of people helping out. I only did four sites. Forest Service, from Forest Health Protection Research and National Forest, numerous, were all major collaborators. They do all the experiments, send me back the insects. Same with Canadian Forest Service, four of the five research stations in Canada, universities, the BC Ministry, as well as various state agencies within the United States, and of course a whole bunch of taxonomic websites, because a lot of species I hadn't seen before. And a lot of help from identifiers. And I think that's the end. Thank you. Yeah, at some point we'll probably start playing with that too. I think our next step is actually to move into hardwood stands and play around with hardwood borers. There's a need in the South, especially with a lot of our silviculture treatments, to see what impacts on hardwood species. And given all you guys, the stuff that you guys have all done, it seems to be quite likely we'll get involved with that before we'll do some other pine pheromone stuff.